The following podcast contains explicit language.
I want to tell you my secret now. I see dead people.
Silent Green is people!
Leave my sister and my daughter!
Rosebud.
What's in the box?
And like that, he's gone.
Hi, and welcome to another Slate spoiler special. I'm Willa Paskin, Slate's TV critic, and this week we're going to be spoiling the Steven Soderbergh series, TV show, phone app, something or other, Mosaic. Here to talk with me about it is tech and culture writer Ingu Kang. Hi, Ingu.
Hi.
So I guess most simply, Mosaic is an extremely chilly murder mystery that I think is really more of a technical exercise or a technical exploration rather than it is a satisfying bit of storytelling. But I guess that means everything that I think is really interesting about it almost has nothing to do with its substance and a ton to do with its form. But I don't want to just totally shortchange its substance. So, Ingu, can you tell me a little bit about the form and then also the plot of Mosaic?
Pretty much everything you need to know, I feel like, is in the title. It's a very fractured Utah noir mystery. And basically, the way that Steven Soderbergh envisioned it is that it would be a kind of take on Choose Your Own Adventure. So Mosaic started as an app on iPhone and iPads. And essentially, it was looking at this mystery, but choosing the parts of it that you wanted to see. And so you sort of are presented with, like, choice A or choice B after you finish each, like, 30-minute-ish discrete chapter. So some of the episodes were actually about 8 minutes, and then the other ones were as long as, like, close to an hour. But essentially, with the app, which came out several months ago, you basically got to pick which parts of the story you wanted to see, and then what you chose wouldn't necessarily change the ending of the story. But apparently, Soderbergh and his writer, Ed Solomon, envisioned this, was that whichever path you chose, it wouldn't change the resolution of the story, but you would get, like, a different path to the end from the beginning. So the story starts off with the murder of a children's book author played by Sharon Stone, who basically had, like, a one-hit wonder 40 years ago. And now she lives in this, like, really beautiful Utah retreat. And it so happens that that Utah retreat has, I don't know, one of some precious mineral.
Beryllium. It has beryllium.
Beryllium. Which is a beautiful name.
I would say the thing to know about the app versus the TV show is that it's a little bit bogus because it doesn't really matter whether you watch it as a TV show or as an app. I found, like, it does have this thing where the story's bifurcating in the app, but as with a real Choose Your Adventure, which when I was a kid, you know, you'd read ahead to, like, see if you died or, like, were in quicksand, and then you'd pick the other path. Like, I was doing that the whole time. So I was sort of getting both the whole way through. And then it's structured a little bit differently in the show. But you basically get the gist, which is it opens with Sharon Stone. The show actually opens sort of in media res with one of the people who may or may not have killed her. But you quickly learn Sharon Stone's backstory. It's, like, 4 years before most of the events of the show. She falls in love with this younger con man who seems to really have fallen in love with her, named Eric Neal. It's revealed that he's really been set up with her. Like, he tells her that he's been sort of set up with her to try to get her to sell her property. She's very furious. And then something happens, like, we sort of cut out at that point, and she's dead. And so Eric is sent to jail for her murder. But 4 years later, his sister is sort of convinced finally of his innocence, and she goes back to this town of Summit to sort of figure out what has happened. She suspects that Olivia's boarder, Joel, who's played by Garrett Hedlund, and we've seen a lot of already in sort of in the past as well, who she sort of also had a flirtation. She thinks it's him. She lures him back to Summit, where she sort of, with the help of the chief of police now named Nate, basically gets him to confess to the murder ultimately, even as we know basically that he didn't actually do it. He just doesn't have any memory of what happened. And this character who's been lurking in the background, Ziggy on the wire. And so it's like very, very obvious procedural casting where like the person who's a little too famous to have no part at all is actually the murderer. turns out to be the murderer. But in sort of, and I think actually in a funny way, the thing is very sort of plausibly, or not plausibly, satisfyingly plotted, but like they just don't care about emotions.
Yeah.
Basically, Joel confesses to the murder and so is jailed. Eric is freed. But we know, watching, that actually Joel didn't commit the murder, and that this younger man, Michael O'Connor, who's sort of been a surrogate son to the Olivia character played by James Ransome, Ziggy, actually is the person who murdered her. And in the app, you actually even have a 20-minute episode that shows in detail how and what happened that they do not have in the TV show, but we sort of still know what happened. So it's like, you know, it's cleverly plotted in the sense that we in the audience have a resolution, but like in the world of the show, justice is not served. Some injustice is essentially served, and the rich and their art collection. There's a lot of art in this show, which is another thing I want to talk about, you know, get away with bad things.
I guess what I wanted to ask you is, was there like, other than the format, other like anything you found interesting about this?
Well, I mean, I am interested in Soderbergh. Like, I'm interested in what he's up to because, you know, this is not true of everything that he does, but watching this show, which is so clean and so cold and very beautiful, very snowy, but really not lived in. Like, it sort of has the feel of, you know, on MTV Cribs, like so many of these people's houses, you'd be like, do you live here? Or did you just have like an interior decorator go to like the fanciest version of Home Depot she could and he could and outfit your house and like, you don't care about anything that's in here. It's just full of weird stuff and kind of empty. Like, that was sort of the decor of Mosaic, like really well-designed hotel. And there's just something about that whole thing where he's really interested in what it looks like, but he doesn't care in this instance about the characters. And I mean, that's sort of been true of some of his like, you know, it's true about Side Effects, for example, or about Haywire. Like, he's interested in some technical component of the project, but he's not interested in some holistic way. Like, it, he has something he's fascinated by. So I think in this, he was sort of fascinated by this idea of like, can I make this also into a something that you watch on your phone? Like, that's interesting to me, how to break this story up and what kind of direction would look good for that. But I don't think he's at any point super interested in the people. And it actually reminded me a lot of the Girlfriend Experience, which the TV show, which is on Stars, which he doesn't direct, but he's obviously a producer of, and I think is very good because it sort of makes a lot out of this sort of chilliness. Like, having a show that's about sex and the commodification of sex that has this sort of distance between you and what's happening is a kind of interesting, that's an interesting pairing. And this is not that interesting a pairing. So it's just like you have this sort of distance, but it's a story you feel like you really are supposed to want, you should care about. And I mean, mysteries are so powerful that I kind of did want to know what happened. And I also thought Sharon Stone was sort of so like virile and wild that I kind of cared about her. But the show is like, you know, it's a choose your own adventure. It's like this, fragmenting points of view where like every choice they give you the more boring person to follow. So like by the end of the show, you're just like with a bunch of really boring people. You know what I mean?
It's interesting that you brought up the Girlfriend Experience. I've only seen the first season so far, but that's an amazing series. I think because of that chilliness that you talk about, but this uneasiness with the commodification of sex is also something in Magic Mike, right? And it's something that I thought that didn't really occur to me watching Mosaic, the app, several months ago. And that I couldn't stop thinking about while watching Mosaic, the HBO series in 2018, was that basically you have with Sharon Stone and these younger men that she has around her, especially with Joel, the Headland character, who is a boarder, and the way that he becomes her boarder is they meet at the party.
This is such a good point, Ingo. I'm so excited. I know where you're going. Go.
Is that he's this aspiring sort of like comic book-ish artist. And she, of course, has had this really great big hit and has all of these connections and all of this access to millionaires, basically, who can give her any sort of money that she wants. Is that it's this like really interesting, well, it starts off as a very interesting gender flip of the sort of like mentor-mentee sort of relationships that we've been hearing about in Hollywood and how those keep going awry because of abuse. And of course, in those powerful man, less powerful woman relationships, you keep having, you know, very obvious instances of abuse.
Right. And this is obviously it ends differently because of the sort of other fundamental gender role stuff. But this is a very explicitly, or not explicitly, but this is very, it maps on very well to this, which is to say that Olivia mentors Joel, offers to mentor him, offers to sort of have him stay at her house in the barn, in a room in the barn for free because she thinks he's hot. Like, it's very explicit that she's flirting with him, that she thinks he's like a tall drink of water, and she's interested in him. She has a crush on him, and so she's sort of interested in his work. And he thinks she's interested in his work. He has a girlfriend. He sort of knows they're flirting, but he thinks she can help him. And so he agrees to sort of, he wants to be mentored by her. He moves into the house. And then this relationship turns totally sour because basically she literally realizes he has a girlfriend, even though she's in love with, like, has fallen in love with someone else. She meets his girlfriend and immediately is disdainful and despises him and sort of is just like treats him like garbage, asks him sort of like as a manservant. And then at the climactic New Year's evening where she is murdered, like she pulls him aside to tell him that he's terrible, that his work isn't any good. And the whole thing was about that she just had wanted to have sex with him. And he's just
and
like,
he's
gotta
never
move
going
on.
To make it as an artist.
And he's never going to make it as an artist. Like, totally crushing, like really manipulative, mean, total
classic
sort of,
abusive, possessive behavior.
Totally. And like totally gender reversed. And then, of course, what happens is because, and what's really when shows think about, and this sort of some of this gender stuff, actually, this is a thing that would happen in Louis a lot, which is why Louis is still an interesting show, despite all the things that Louis C.K. did, is that there is still, even with this reverse, you cannot reverse like literally the physical power of men and women. And so it turns then into a story about her dying and Joel thinking that maybe he killed her because he was so angry. And this, and they immediately have flipped back into sort of more standard male-female roles just because of how much more physically powerful he is than her, even though she is sort of been the one who's manipulating him this entire time. That's I hadn't even thought about that. That's a super interesting thing about the show. That was great. I'm really so happy you brought that up.
Yay. So the thing that, like, that's sort of like the premise that we begin Mosaic with, right? And that Sharon Stone performance is, as you said, so wild. Viral was such an amazing word to use to describe her performance with. And she has this like very unhinged quality that is like extremely sexy at the same time. And she is just like in her element because she's also kind of basically cruising with her gay best friend who was played by Paul Rubens. And so watching her sort of like be in thrall of her own sexual power, like after she dies, you just like, there's just like nothing in Mosaic that is anywhere near that interesting.
Totally. You're like, you just killed your most interesting character. Like, can we at least have her in flashbacks or like as a ghost or something? But no. You can have her. And instead, what you get essentially is this character, Petra, who is Eric Neal's sister, who is played in like, I don't even, like, I would say like deadpan, but like, I just mean like dead. Like, she's just played so flatly by this actress named Jennifer Farron. And it's just, you know, Farron's performance, as well as Hedlund's, although I think Garrett Hedlund, who plays Joel, is a little better. And they're sort of the protagonists of the second half of the show, are both really flat. And And Hedlund, actually, Joel's character even has a number of scenes where you hear his interior monologue. Like, he has a friend say, you know, I talked about you to the police. And there's a scene where he's sitting in the car and he wants to confess something to the police. And you can hear in his mind him saying, like, Joel, just do this. Joel, stop doing that. Like, pull over to the side of the road. Or, you know, he's very worked up in his brain. And Hedlund's face literally, like, it shows nothing. Like, I mean, it shows so little of what is going on in his mind at that time. And it's so interesting because those things are so stark that I almost am like, this must be a choice, like a choice for everybody, that this guy is just supposed to be this stoic and sort of this, like, mm-hmm. sort of well-meaning stoic. And it really just runs into, like, a thing about acting, which is, like, I don't know if you can't really be a perfect stoic and also be a good actor. Like, we need to be able to see something in you. And so he's playing this extremely sort of, like, self-contained man. And so it's just very, and it's pretty dull. And Petra, who's my interior monologue we know even less about, is, like, even worse. I mean, she's sort of the most laughable line in the whole show is that, and it might just be because Paul Rubens is, like, joking around. Paul Rubens is also, was obviously Pee Wee Herman, and he plays Olivia Sharon Stone's character's best friend named JC, and he's, like, very flamboyant and sort of campy. And he's sort of in the beginning, and then he shows up at the end, and sort of towards the end, and he has a scene with Petra in which he says to her, and he's not the first character to say it, but the way he delivered it, you can just, like, tell he's, like, air quoting it, where he's like, I can't tell if you're the most impressive person I've ever met or if you're crazy or something. And it's, like, so jarring and also so preposterous because nothing, like, everyone has been telling us that she's intense, but she's, like, a piece of cardboard or something. And I thought it was extremely funny, and I wished he'd been in the whole show. And she, I do have a question about her, though, a plot question, which Uh-oh. Is, well, so sort of towards the end, she figures out the mystery. She figures out that O'Connor, who the person who killed Olivia, and his sort of his own mentor slash other rich guy who lives in Summit are really responsible for Olivia's murder. And she goes to their house, to sort of talk to them about it. And they ask, like, what she wants. And she says, I want the Red Room, which is not like a murder garroting room, but a room that is full of, like, priceless artwork. And we've been told she's very interested in art. And she's demonstrated that a number of times. And I was just curious, does she get it?
I don't think that we know. She has, like, this, like, very, like, pseudo intense scene where it's sort of like the detective figuring out everything and then leaves that for the audience. And it's also, like, unfortunately for the actress, a scene that goes on forever because, as I said earlier, everything that you need to know about Mosaic is in the title. It's so many details about so many different characters that, like, it's almost impossible to keep everything in your head.
But it's interesting because I actually think for a murder mystery, it's not more details. It's just, like, they don't tell a murder mystery in the regular way, which is, like, to explore avenues and then have red herrings. And then you get to, like, get rid of it. It's like they give you this information dump and you have to sort through it, like, all at once. Like, they didn't, because they don't actually care about the mystery, really. It's like care about their boring characters, which is a kind of contradiction because they don't care about those characters either. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. Continue talking about Petra's dull scene.
So it's basically this scene that goes on forever. I mean, I'm getting completely lost in the details. And then she turns to the guy who, like, did it, or, like, his accomplice or whatever.
She's talking to a man played by Michael Cyrus, who the character's name is Tom Davis.
And basically, you know, she's been talking for, like, 5 minutes. And he basically gets to the point of, like, well, what do you want? And I think instead of her brother coming out of jail, she says, I want your art. And then I think that's the end of the miniseries. Like, you don't even find out what happens. And the thing is that, like, for most of, after Sharon Stone's character dies, you basically have this, like, twin plot where Joel's trying to figure out who did it and then thinks that, and then comes upon the realization that it was actually himself. And Petra, who is basically, like, this, like, crazy amateur Reddit detective without the Reddit, and Bugsy police chief and like clues and sort of like pieces together all of the clues and comes to this like completely different conclusion about who did it. It doesn't really matter which theory is true because they're both incredibly impactless. And so after she
One of them is true, which is that we know Joel didn't do it and that the other guy did.
Yes. And at the same time, when we where we should get sort of like this like satisfying like restoration of justice, you get nothing.
But I liked that. See, that's what I liked about it. I thought that that was well plotted. I like that it's like we're going to solve this case, but you don't actually get to be satisfied that justice is simple. Like, this is much more convenient for all of these people for Joel to have done it. There's these rich guys. They're not going to pay the consequences. So we know the truth, but it doesn't matter. I like that sort of sour, cynical twist in any murder mystery. But I would just say that there's this moment, just going back to the moment when Petra asked for the red room, and it's an interesting moment because we needed something from the actress because she's doing something we don't expect, which is she's been single-mindedly, we've been told and seen, single-mindedly fixated on releasing her brother, who she's learned more and more unpleasant things about as she's been going about trying to free him, and he's her brother, Eric, who's the character Eric Muriel, who's played by this actor Frederick Weller, and is like so intense. It's pretty.
Yes,
it's actually funny how intense that guy is. you know, she's so single-mindedly focused on releasing him, and she's finally, you know, basically she sort of has solved the case and has brought it to the attention of the people who did the deed, and they're sort of savvy and gross enough that they're like, they get it. Like, if she came to see Eric Davis and didn't go to the cops, it's because she wants something other than justice. So he's like, well, what do you want? She says, I want this art. And that's supposed to be a surprise to us. And then we're supposed to have some insight into her. But like, because it's so flat, we just don't know what it means. It's like, is she because she's betrayed by her brother? Is it because the whole time she just wanted the art? Is it because she's been sort of taken in by this, like, by the acquisitiveness of this swanky world all around her? Like, what's going on? And then she meets the, you know, he sort of considers this offer. She meets the actual murderer. I think there is a sort of a coda after that where someone comes to say they're writing a book about it. You know, there's some minor details, but that's really the climax. But there's like a look that he gives her, that Eric gives her, where it's almost like he's like, okay, you can have that room. Like, we get it that you have it. And I just couldn't tell if she got it, because that would also be kind of rad, even though it has there's no feeling attached to that. I would again be like, that's a nice scripted detail that like Soderbergh didn't care about bringing out at all. There is also a scene where Petra looks at art. And that was really bad because she has no feelings.
It was really bad because you're supposed to get like that shock and awe from her, this like crazy art lover, being in this red room.
It is like the Ferris Bueller scene where they're like going to the Art Institute of Chicago and they like stare at the painting. It's like she's looking at a Van Gogh, I think. And it reminded me of that, but like it's so, so soulless because you don't believe that she has a soul or that she cares about art. Yeah.
I would like to say that if there was like sort of like one thing I found very promising, I guess, it was that atmosphere, the sociological setting, I guess, where you have this like very snowy, very picturesque ski town, and you have a lot of like very wealthy people and a lot of, I don't know, I guess like working class people who want to come in and either absorb some of that wealth or sort of be forced to work in service of those rich people, and sort of like the resentment that breeds. So the relationship between Joel and Olivia, I mean, when she invites him to live in her barn, basically, which is sort of like this like converted second house on her property, he thinks he's sort of getting this shortcut. And because it's like a very small town, we haven't talked about the cop yet, who is named Nate and is played by Devin Rattray.
And who's good.
Yes. And
he's good.
Basically,
he's good. He seems like a real person.
When he investigates Joel, he turns to Joel and he says, well, you're my friend. And later, he says to Joel, you're my friend and you lied to me. And he also acknowledges very freely his friendship with a key witness in the case of whether Joel did it or not. And the fact that, like, a small town chief can just sort of, like, go around and be very, like, chummy and bro-y with the lead murder suspect and the a key witness, I thought was, like, very telling, like, of the small town. Yeah. And so there are, like, pieces here that I thought were really promising.
Yeah, well, let's take it out, I guess, away from the actual substance of a mosaic, which is to say, I mean, what do you think about the prospect of a TV show that you watch on your phone mostly? Like, did this make you think there should be more things like this, or that there might be a story that was better suited to being told like this? Or did you feel like this is just like a funny, interesting experiment that doesn't need to be repeated?
I, especially with like a really beautiful show like this, it's almost like it's like disservice to watch it on one's phone. But well,
it is an interesting thing that like it is Soderbergh and then he put it on a phone. So there's all these shots of like beautiful snow, but you can't really see them because it's on your phone. In that way, it's a weird match of director and subject. I mean, a director and form, even though I think he's interested in working in sort of all genres and all formats.
But I definitely got the sense when I was watching Mosaic for the first time on an app that I felt like I was like missing out on something because the storyline didn't quite make sense. And I followed mostly Petra's storyline because you basically choose between Petra's storyline and Joel's storyline as you're going through the story in the app. And I mean, we've already discussed, like, she's a really bad character and, like, a weak actress. And I definitely felt like I was missing out on something interesting. And so to watch this and realize I actually didn't miss much.
It's funny.
I don't know.
I didn't watch it the way the app wanted me to watch it. I just sort of watched all the pieces. I was going back and forth. I was also sort of watching the show simultaneously. And I think this idea, this choose your adventure idea, which actually Arrested Development, when it was first coming back to Netflix, they had sort of proposed that that's what they were going to be, a choose your own adventure show. And then obviously that became too preposterous and logistically difficult to do, so they just turned it into the new first season for Netflix. And when Netflix was first starting to make shows, there was a lot of conversation about like TV could look like anything. Maybe episodes will be of different length and maybe they'll be formally inventive and sort of in this sort of choose your own adventure way or something we hadn't even thought of yet. And that has obviously not at all come to pass. And I mean, I guess it may come to pass at some point. But I did like watching it on my phone, and not because I always wanted to watch it on my phone, but because I just have my phone with me all the time. Like, I was sitting in the dark nursing my child, and I was like, oh, great, I don't need to have my big computer here to do this. And then I can go downstairs and also watch it on my computer, which, of course, is like why people stream things on their phone. But it was actually the app I thought was easier to do that on than it is to sort of load up all the other stuff. And I did enough. I wrote about this, but I mean, just I'm ashamed this is true, but like I am a person who watches things with my phone in my hand, like doing other stuff sometimes. I certainly would have been doing other stuff while watching Mosaic, particularly, you know, like sort of shows that don't really require your whole attention. And watching on my phone, I could not do that. Like, I kept trying to be like, can I text somebody or like open Candy Crush? And like, if you do that, the show stops playing. So in a weird way, it was almost like when you watch things with subtitles, when you really can't do anything else either, because if you aren't reading the screen, you literally don't know what's happening because people are talking in a language you don't understand. And that was sort of like Mosaic, it like forced me to pay attention to it. And I sort of think there's room there for that, or just like maybe for companies to just have like much better apps. So like it's just as seamless to watch on them as it is anywhere else. But I'm not sure that this like thing with the different paths or like the gimmickiness of it is going to make them is like makes it better than the TV experience. I could just imagine sort of like having a nice experience, like figuring out how to have TV shows in apps in some way that just made them super easy to load. I will just also say that in the app, there is like while you're watching these little like you get little notices basically that there was a supporting materials and you could like click on a link like not a link, like you'd click on it and it would play like another short related video, or it'd send you to a PDF of something, or like to a Wikipedia page about something that they were talking about. Like, and I, you know, this is sort of all the stuff wasn't in the TV show. And presumably if people were obsessed with Mosaic, it would be like Reddit bait, except it was totally remedial Reddit bait. Like, it wasn't anything you really needed, but it was like thinking about those sort of things. And I could imagine that there is a show that with enough density and that people organically actually cared about that could have sort of like those little extras and have people be interested like, in them. But I don't
like
know.
Stranger Things, I think, would have been like a really great example of a show that would have benefited from this. Because there's so much mystery around the monster and there's so much world building to be done. Whereas, I mean, as we've discussed, there's not really much of a world here.
Right. I mean, Stranger Things is also interesting because a choose your own adventure kind of thing is sort of, it's so of that same moment. Like, it's the same type of thing. It's like a 80s kids thing. Yeah, someone should try it with something like that, or something where the stories are much more self-contained, and maybe shorter, and maybe have cliffhangers. Like, I couldn't tell if, like, because it's on your phone, if we want less action or more action. Mosaic made this choice that we only, like, really want conversations, because, I mean, maybe you can hear them on your phone, but I sort of wondered, like, maybe we want something really exciting. I don't know. Anyway, I sort of think this is, like, one of those things where you'd think there could be more exploration of this question, but like there just won't be, because it's not yet a good enough idea, or the tech isn't quite good enough to make it a good idea yet. Does that make
this is yeah this is pulling back even further, but I guess wait, can you hear the rain?
Yeah. Is that the rain?
Sorry. It just got like really really intense. I guess the other question, as long as we're talking about choose your own adventure, which this tech technically isn't, because there is only one bad guy in the end, is do you want stories where you get to decide like what the ending is going to be in a certain sense? Well, or with like different like resolutions available to you?
Well, no one's done that yet, but I actually would love that, because I think we're like, I don't want that always, but I would love that as an experiment, because I think we're, as audiences, like, so slavishly devoted to what the people making the show think should happen, that I think it would be awesome to just be like, hey, guys, you might have to live with, like, uncertainty and multiple conclusions and, like, various resolutions, and just, like, not one is better than the other. I mean, that's not, I don't want that in all my TV, but I could imagine a really satisfying, or not satisfying, like, a really wonderfully irksome and elbowy show that did that. So I would like to see that. But this one didn't. I mean, I think the question of whether like getting from point A to point B by a route you make yourself or a route they choose for you, like if there's a really anything beneficial to that or artistically interesting or substantive, I'm not sure. I mean, again, like this is just a hard show to know if that's true before it, because it sort of seems like such a weird mix, a weird match of sensibility and form.
I would agree with that.
Okay. I think we mosaiced ourselves out. We don't have anything else. Yeah, you could watch Mosaic, or you could just like watch the Sharon Stone parts of Mosaic, and then you'd be like content. And then it could be like a really sad little mini TV show where like the cool lady died and you just don't know why. And I mean, we told you why, so you don't even have to watch anymore. Okay, thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe to the Slate Spoiler Special podcast feed. And if you like the show, please rate and review it in the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any suggestions for movies or TV shows we should spoil, or if you have any other feedback you'd like to share, please send it to spoilers@slate.com. Our producer is Daniel Schrader. For Ingu, I'm Willa Paskin. Thanks for listening.